Chapter 3 Part 1 That afternoon, we went to tea with Mr. Pye. He was a small, fat man who lived at Prior's Lodge, a very beautiful house, and made even more beautiful by Mr. Pye. Every piece of furniture was polished and set in the perfect place. The curtains, too, were all made in perfectly chosen colours and of the most expensive silks. I thought that living there would be rather like living in a museum. Mr. Pye's greatest pleasure was taking people round his house. His small hand shook as he described his treasures. Luckily, Joanna and I are both interested in beautiful old furniture. "It is so fortunate," Mr. Pye said, "to have you here in Limstock. The good people of the town are so, well, they don't know anything about style. The insides of their houses would make you cry, dear lady. Perhaps they have already done so." Joanna said that she hadn't gone quite as far as that. "But I'm sure you agree," he said, "that beauty is the only thing worth living for. So why do people surround themselves with ugliness?" Joanna said it was very strange. "Strange? It's criminal, and they give such stupid excuses. They even say that something is comfortable. Now, the house you are renting, Miss Emily Barton's house, has some quite nice pieces in it, but sometimes I think it looks uncared for, because she likes to keep things looking the same as when her mother was alive." He turned to me, and his voice changed from that of a sensitive artist to that of a gossip. "You didn't know the family at all?" "No, well, the old mother was an extraordinary person, quite extraordinary. A monster. The girls, that's what she always called her five daughters, and the eldest was well over 60 then. Every night they had to go to bed at 10 o'clock, and they were never allowed to invite friends home. She had no respect for them because they were not married. But she arranged their lives so that it was impossible for them to meet anybody." "It sounds like a book," said Joanna. "Oh, it was. And then the awful old woman died. But of course, it was far too late then. And soon they just died, one after the other. All except Emily. Oh, it is so sad that she now has money problems." "We feel rather awful being in her house," said Joanna. "No, no, my dear, you mustn't feel like that. She told me herself how happy she was to have got such nice tenants." It was time to leave, and we all went out into the hall. As we reached the front door, a letter came through the letterbox and fell on the floor. Mr. Pye picked it up. "My dear young people, such a pleasure to meet some lively minds for a change. Limstock is beautiful, but nothing ever happens." He helped me into the car. Then Joanna drove off, and I turned to wave goodbye to Mr. Pye. But he did not see me, for he had just opened his letter, and his face was twisted with anger and shock. At that moment, I knew that there had been something familiar about that envelope.
"Goodness," said Joanna, looking in the car mirror. "What's upset the poor old boy?"
"I think," I said, "that it's the letter."
"You mean a letter like the one you got? Oh, but who writes these things, Jerry, and why?"
"You must read Freud and Jung to find that out," I said, "or ask Dr. Griffith." Joanna shook her head.
"Oh, Dr. Griffith doesn't like me."
"He's hardly seen you."
He's seen quite enough, it seems, to make him cross over the road if he sees me coming. Oh, but seriously, Jerry, why do people write anonymous letters?
I suppose that if others have been unkind to you, or just not noticed you, and your life is dull and empty, you might get a sense of power from hurting people who are happy. As we drove through the town, I looked at the few men and women in the high street. Was one of those healthy country people really filled with hate behind their calm expression? Planning, perhaps, even now, another evil letter. But I still did not take it seriously. Part 2. 2 days later, on Saturday afternoon, we went to a card party at the Symingtons. There were two tables. The players were the Symingtons, ourselves, Miss Griffith, Mr. Pye, Miss Barton, and a Colonel Appleton, who lived in a nearby village. When we arrived, Elsie Holland, the children's governess, was searching for some extra notebooks in the desk. She floated across the floor with them in the same way as when I had first seen her, but the magic was gone. I now noticed how large her teeth were, and the way she opened her mouth very wide when she laughed, which she did a lot.
Are these notebooks all right, Mrs. Symington? Oh, they are a bit yellow round the edges. Anyway, I'm taking the boys to Long Barrow, so there won't be any noise.
We sat down and began to play a game of bridge. Everyone was very friendly, and the afternoon passed quickly and enjoyably. We then had tea in the dining room. Suddenly, two excited little boys ran in. Mrs. Symington smiled with pride as she introduced her sons to us. Then, just as we were finishing our tea, I heard a sound and turned my head to see Megan standing between the open French windows.
"Oh," said her mother, sounding surprised. "Here's Megan. I'm sorry, but I forgot about your tea, dear. Miss Holland and the boys took theirs out with them." "That's all right. I'll go to the kitchen."
Megan moved silently across the room. Mrs. Symington said with a little laugh,
"Poor Megan. Girls are so awkward when they've just left school."
Joanna looked up.
"But Megan's 20, isn't she?" "Oh, yes, yes, she is. But she's very young for her age, which is so nice. I expect all mothers want their children to remain babies."
"I can't think why," said Joanna.
"It would be a bit difficult to have a child who had a 6-year-old brain in a grown-up body." "Oh, you mustn't take things so seriously," said Mrs. Symington.
As we drove home, Joanna said,
"I feel very sorry for Megan. Her mother doesn't like her."
"Oh, Joanna, it's not as bad as that."
"Yes, it is. Megan does not fit into the Symington family. It's complete without her, and that's a very unhappy feeling for a sensitive girl to have. And she is sensitive."
"Yes," I said. "I think she is." Joanna suddenly laughed.
"Bad luck for you about the governess."
"I don't know what you mean."
"Nonsense. And I agree with you. It is a waste. She is so beautiful. Until she opens her mouth to talk or laugh. But I'm glad you noticed her. It is a sign that you are coming alive again. I was quite worried about you at the hospital. You never even looked at that very pretty nurse you had."
I smiled. "But what about you?"
"Me?"
"Yes. You'll need someone to give you some excitement down here. So what about Owen Griffith? He's the only unmarried man in the place. Joanna drove in silence through the gate and round to the garage. Then she said,
I don't understand why any man would cross the street to avoid me. It's rude, apart from anything else.
I got carefully out of the car, then stood leaning on my sticks. I'll tell you this. Owen Griffith is not one of those weak, artistic young men you've always liked. So be careful. He could be dangerous.
Oh, do you think so?
Joanna said with obvious pleasure at the thought.
But how dare he cross the street when he saw me coming?
We have come down here, I said, for peace and quiet, and I am determined that we will get it. But peace and quiet were the last things we were to have.